Morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of love. We're so glad you all could join us. We are recording this morning from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And again, we welcome you all. And we'll start with our morning prayer.
Okay. I'm reading from page 134 of Collectania and 195 of Worksheets, Prayers and Argument. Our salvation is through love. Call God love always and bend all your efforts toward achieving perfect love in thought, word, and deed. This is the way. All is one through it. Its presence gives me all. Its absence takes all away from me. Therefore, love is a fulfilling of the law. Love is heaven, and hate is hell. Our only way to heaven is through love. Our sure way to hell is through hate. Watch. All is peace and truth. There is no error, no hatred, no sin. All is love, love for God and man. There abide, for if you abide in love and truth and love abide in you, no evil can come of it. And the result must be, is health, harmony, heaven. The freedom of the children of God comes with this true consciousness. Mary Baker Eddy.
Well, thank you. We wouldn't want to have missed that one. Thank you. All right, Karen.
Watch number 173. Watch, lest you call your brother a fool and thus be in danger of hellfire. To hold anyone as being a channel for error or animal magnetism without rebuking such a picture and making nothing of it is to call your brother a fool, since you are holding him as cut off from mind, the only source of wisdom, and making error real. Our household requires us to do more work to see them as perfect children of God than do strangers, since we are more apt to harbor an unscientific sense of man without resisting it in our homes than outside. Our motive for uncovering and handling error in our homes should not be just for the sake of protecting ourselves. We should do it because we desire to release our brother man, if possible, from the unconscious servitude which lending oneself to being a channel for error always carries with it. It is true that you must admit your brother a fool because he is functioning under a foolish mind, before you can know that his real self is wise, because it is functioning under the unerring wisdom of God. But this first step is telling the truth about the lie, namely, that the acceptance of foolish mortal mind causes one to manifest foolishness, even though this be the testimony of a lie. It takes careful demonstration to change one's concept of one's nearest and dearest from being channels for error to being channels for God. But this must be done for one's own sake, as well as for the sake of one's family. You must hold your brother man as being a channel for an infinite blessing to you. You must declare and know that God is using him at all times to bless you, as well as to bless himself and others. Jesus's query, quote, "Who made me a judge over you?" end quote, is a rebuke to the smug way we judge between people, calling one a channel for good and another a channel for evil. Jesus' statement can be paraphrased, quote, "Do you credit me with harboring mortal sense that I should declare that one mortal is better than another when I know all men in reality to be children of God and hence channels of good to each other and to me?" End quote.
Thank you. It's wonderful. Thank you very much. And who would like to comment?
Well, that's definitely a love your brother. You love your neighbor as yourself. And your neighbor is definitely those you live with in your home. But it's, love your neighbor as yourself, as God sees him and yourself.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I thought this was such a beautiful watch. Sort of like a Christian Science treatment in a nutshell. You see the error and you face it down, and then you replace it with the truth and you end with love. And it just is the hardest thing to do, what this talked about, to not cut anyone off from mind, the same mind, you know, that you express that God is. It's the hardest thing to do because it sneaks right up on you, and all of a sudden you're having these thoughts about somebody who's thinking badly or whatever, and it's just a great thing to remind yourself of 25 times a day. So I'm grateful for that.
Thank you.
It's a difficult one to do, especially for people in your home, because they keep exhibiting the same behavior. You're like, what is the? It's not easy to separate the lie from the person. But if we're obedient to God, yes, we have to, because it says that the best way that anyone can love anyone is to see them the way God sees them. And that, I think it's, if we're obedient to that, we will heed that and put it in practice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure makes you want to think twice before you start being critical of other people. I mean, the reality, I think, is that we're all working out our salvation, and we're all in different places. And sometimes that's hard to see, but I got to believe that that is really what's going on. So wouldn't it be so much better to think something that would be more encouraging and hopeful and helpful instead of critical? And you know, this goes on so frequently here in today's society. But think about it. If even Jesus himself could say, who made me a judge over you? What can we say about ourselves about judging others? So,
you know, unless you know that a behavior exhibited is not really the person, is mesmerism. How do you do that? You know, maybe before Christian Science, I didn't know ever that, you know, you are not to see the person as the behavior that they are exhibiting. So it's something to come to, really.
Yes, thank you. We're always taught here, you separate the error from the person. You can condemn the error, but never the person. The person is a child of God. The other is an illusion. It's animal magnetism. It's not the truth. And you can prove it. You can prove it.
And isn't this what the golden text is all about? Mm-hmm. Love one another as I have loved you.
Yeah,
it should make us all want to learn more about how Jesus actually loved us, or loves in the present tense us. I mean, even when he rebuked the Pharisees and the Sadducees, I mean, he was pretty hard on some of them. But he did it because he loved them. He wanted to help them. And Mrs. Eddy says somewhere that, you know, Jesus rebuked sinners and so forth because he was their friend. Mm-hmm. Every rebuke we give, every criticism we give should be out of love. If it's not out of love, well, it's not good enough.
don't keep your mouth closed until you feel the love. It has to be love inspired. I was going over some of my notes, things that I have collected and given testimonies about, and other things, a few of them about love. One of them something was actually Dale W. had found from Joseph Mann's 1923 class notes. Now, Joseph Mann, those of you who remember, do you remember who he was?
Yeah, he was shot.
One who was shot.
He was shot.
Shot in the heart.
Yeah.
And had Christian Science treatment, and in a day or two, got up completely healed, right? Ate everything. Was quite a remarkable healing. And after that, he did become a practitioner. I was talking to Gary today about, you know, as a child, do you remember when you'd have healings as a child? When you felt better, right? There was no recuperating. I don't remember recuperating. You just, it's that childlike, I'm great. I want to go out and play with my friends. Sometimes it's well to think about that, because that's how it should be. That's how a real science treatment is, can be. Anyway, so he was shot in the heart, and he was a practitioner. And in his 1923 class notes, he writes, "Christian scientists are not running their lives by the keynotes of Christianity. So long as smug self-satisfaction preserves enough of personal sense to deal grudgingly with each other, instead of overflowingly, lovingly, and healingly." Now, those three words, they're so beautiful. You should pin them up somewhere and ask yourself, am I feeling this right now? Not this smug self-satisfaction. It was in the Watching Point. Wasn't that word in the Watching Point, or smugness? Holier-than-thou attitude. But this feeling of overflowingly, lovingly, healingly. And those aren't even words, I don't think. But they are words. So, and this self-examination that we must always be doing to ourselves, at the end of the day, asking, have I done what and as I should? Have I been done as faithfully as I can to you, Lord? Have I obeyed your commandments as well as I can?
Or was I a Pharisee today?
Or was I a Pharisee? Or did I lose my tempers? Sort of like Elizabeth was talking about guarding ourselves. This topic, really all the synonyms, but perhaps maybe especially the topic of love, is just, I mean, it's so awesome. And I thought, goodness, who are any of us really to sit here and talk about it? But if we talk about it, let it be reverently, overflowingly, lovingly, healingly, mm-hmm. with the greatest love and respect and awe for our Father, Mother, God. Now, along with that, last week we had a visitor come. He was a great blessing to us. And the other day he sent me something that I'm going to share with you all. He wanted us to. Now, many of you might know an article called The Secret. We had it in the Healing Thoughts magazine years ago. We didn't know who wrote it, however. I remember it went under anonymous, or I kind of vaguely remember it was a letter, a practitioner writing to a letter in Florence, Italy, or something like that. Well, anyway, our friend from last week, whose grandfather happened to be a practitioner and a lecturer, and also my Sunday school teacher at the Mother Church, which I found incredibly interesting. Yeah, I was so happy to hear that. He'd been a wonderful Sunday school teacher. Anyway, he said that the author of this, it's from a 1901 lecture by Irving Tomlinson, and it was called The Wonderful Secret. Irving Tomlinson, he's our dear, dear friend, 12 years with Mary Baker Eddy. I have infinite respect for him. Well, so I'll have Gary read that. It's just a short page.
The whole thing?
No, just that, please. Just, I'll do it. There.
There. Okay. The wonderful secret. I have learned to make science, the science of Christ, a thing of life and not of words. And I'm going to tell you what the wonderful secret is, for it is wonderful. Now, it is this: not to see or repeat or hear any kind of imperfection. It is hearing, seeing, and repeating good, and good only, at all times and under all circumstances, in spite of everything that appears to the contrary. I make this resolution every morning when I first open my eyes, and I renew it every hour of the day. I see perfection, perfect cause and perfect effect, perfect God, perfect man, and I refuse to make any kind of exception. I refuse to admit the slightest imperfection in myself, in my friends, in any so-called enemies, in my affairs, and in the affairs of the world. I take my stand every day for the perfection of God and everything and everybody that God has made. I look upon the world with God's eyes, and I see it as He sees it. I refuse to see it any other way. I stop a dozen times a day to renew my resolve and make sure that I am not repeating error or giving way to fear or criticism. I watch thoughts even about people, the lame, the old, the unlovely, to sense, that I pass. I have taken the radical stand for the perfection of all things, and I will not, I absolutely will not, release the perfect standard. The results has been marvelous. Try it. You will forget to wear glasses. They will become unnecessary. You will be seeing with God's eyes, and you will behold a perfect universe. The outward conditions are pictured on our inward thinking. To change that picture, one must change the thoughts that produce the picture.
Thank you. And then our friend writes, the challenge. After stumbling on the wonderful secret, amid a recent spell of what felt like infinite inactivity in my life, a 21 challenge was born based on the theory it takes 21 days to break a habit. Since all right activity, good, originates not from out, but from in, meaning from God, I knew I had to zero in on the in. Now, if God was limitless good, my supposed stagnancy was but the mere effect of foggy vision. And that could only be the fog of human will. The constant claim we're separate from God. We can't fight the fog, but we can shine through it with the mind of Christ, our inner beam that sees true reality, not as material, flawed, but spiritual, perfect. As we outshine the fog, we find good God everywhere. Irving Tomlinson's daily stand to see past mortal personality into our actual divine identity reveals present goodness is a spiritual fact. As our Christ mind animates us, we start noting other discords in our lives, mental, physical, financial, fading away. I erred a lot, but swift rebounds were key. Each day, I saw more patience, more presence, more love, directly leading to unanticipated activity. A month removed, and my quicker shifts to good are permanent. Permanent proof that spiritualizing thought is a law that locks in outward harmony. Jesus healed by seeing perfect God and perfect man, stating that we can do likewise. The cool part, since God is the one mind of everyone, your work not only transforms you and those you meet, but all in the world attuned to spiritual consciousness. And then he gives you three steps. One, wake up, read, internalize this wonderful secret. Pray to adopt the Christ mind. Allow only good to take root in thought. Two, set hourly alarms as prompts to renew resolve. When you err, quickly shift to good and move on. No dwelling or self-condemning. God isn't aware of either. He's 100% love. This is hard at first, but trust that it gets easier. And three, record all unanticipated good from the day. No phones before sleep. One down, 20 to go. So I thought that was very beautiful. And we've talked about setting alarms during the day to make sure we pray, turn our thought to God. Well, this is even a little more specific as to what to do. And honestly, in today, when there's just so much bad-mouthing each other and all this kind of talk going on, what a wonderful exercise. In something I was reading by Martha Wilcox, she was talking about gossip and how gossip is known as the cardinal sin. It's so easy to fall into idle talk or gossip. And this will help keep your thought seeing as God sees, seeing things rightly. And then also, I feel this is important as well. This is in some notes on True Vision by John Morgan, the spirit one, where he says, "The clear sight of spirit does not blind me to faults and errors. Rather, I detect them more clearly. But as unrealities, I discern only the good and the true to be real, and so my eye is single. I positively look for the real, the good, and the true. In spirit, good vision is natural, and it is irreversible. My outlook is always positive, never negative, because my vision is spiritual." So this ability is not a matter of, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Yeah. But it's a matter of seeing as God sees. And if you do, you will see everything perfect. You will see those things that aren't right. You might have to correct them at times. But you always bring it back to the real picture, and you prove the nothingness of the error. They need to come up to the surface in order to be healed, but then you prove its nothingness. You don't just ignore it or sweep it under the carpet, but prove its nothingness. And Mrs. Eddy says how important it is, even before you talk about such things, don't talk about it unless you're willing to prove it's nothing. Don't go around saying, "Oh, that's not real. This isn't real." Well, prove it, please. Okay. Otherwise, I guess we can all be a little more quiet.
But what I liked about this discipline of seeing as God sees and insisting upon it is what enables you to reduce error to nothing. Not only do you not ignore it, but you don't make a reality of it and fight it. You don't argue with it. You destroy it, knowing the allness of good God. It's a fine line, and it's not always easy, but it's a discipline that if you can, and we're all working at it, if you can achieve the discipline your own thought, to stay in the Father's house, to see as God sees. When error comes to you, and it will, it'll try you, it'll test you. So don't be surprised and don't be discouraged and don't be amazed when it tests you. You will be ready for it. Because God doesn't allow things to come to you that you aren't ready for.
Now back to my notes. I found this. This was something that Anne from England sent, and it came from the, what was it, the 100 years or a century of Christian Science Healing, which I haven't read in a long time, but I know it was wonderful when I did read it. So many wonderful healings. And it describes the spring of 1945. And, well, it was wartime. And there was an enemy. I don't want to say who or what nationality, but an enemy, a so-called enemy, was coming in to conquer Vienna. And it had just recently conquered Budapest. And there was all kinds of talk about how awful it was, the horror stories of it. The radios, people were full of these awful stories. And everyone was told to get the heck out of Dodge, to get out of Vienna as soon as you could. So this woman was hearing all this. She was a Christian Scientist. And her husband had a friend who brought a truck over to her home and told her to get in as soon, get in quickly, let's get out of here as soon as we can. And there was much in her that wanted to go. They were going to go to Switzerland, which is a free country and which she was originally from. So she would actually like to go back to Switzerland. But something told her not to. Something said to her, her inner Christian Science voice, if it's true for one person, it has to be true for all. She wasn't going to accept this awful picture of war, division, and hatred. And then she went into the hallway and prayed. She said at that point she was used to asking God all the time, God, what should I do? What should I do, Father? So she asked that question, and the question came, what are you running from? What are you running from? Hatred, fear, all of this, is that what you're running from? And you know, we know once you start running, arrow will keep you running. So she said, nope, I'm not running, I'm staying. And she did. And her home became a haven for all kinds of people to come and stay there. And they felt the peace of her home. And one of the occupants was the owner of a grocery store, and he would bring everyone food, and other people brought food or blankets or other things they needed. And then what would seem miraculously, when the so-called enemy did enter the town, they left this home, these people, totally alone. If anything, I mean, one time they came and joined, and they brought food. And in fact, they put this little woman up on their shoulders and were calling her by affectionate names. and everyone around said, these people have a blind spot to you. They don't seem to see you. But you see, she didn't see them, did she? She didn't see them as the enemy. She was knowing they were perfect children of God. And so they survived that time in peace. And Mrs. Eddy says, on one side, there'll be science and peace. On the other side, there will be discord and dismay. So you see, this woman adopted the secret, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
She did. And I know there are many other instances of this that we've read about, and perhaps you've experienced yourself. So,
is it Tomlinson who wrote that? Because it's been here, I've read it before, but it never gave who is saying it.
That's what, according to this friend that came last week, it was Irving Tomlinson. And what did I say? 1901, he wrote it as a lecture. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I remember us talking, who wrote this? Who was this? And we never knew. But so I'm glad to have found that answer. And it makes sense because he was such a good metaphysician, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So we can post that. And our friend was saying, you know, he's trying to reach new people, new thoughts, young people with this. And I'm sure he will, because he's feeling so inspired by it to do it. He felt so inspired, and because it has helped him. And when it helps you, it will help someone else. And that's what to be inspired means. So, all right, I think I'll go now to Jeremy. You don't have to read the whole thing, but maybe you can paraphrase a little. I don't know if you
brought it. Yeah, sure. Well, I just, after reading the lesson this week, I just got thinking about Jesus feeding the multitude and how, you know, as a beginner or even an intermediate in Christian Science, that seems like such a hard problem. How did Jesus do this? But then I realized that at that stage, the loaves and the fishes were just ideas to him, and he was able to multiply them in that way. And in the same way, you know, we are given God's ideas of joy and gratitude and, you know, all the other good things. And certainly we can multiply those things each day, you know, and it doesn't take away from us. Just like, you know, when you smile at someone, you give them that smile, but it doesn't take it away from you. So just how important that is, that we take this opportunity in a small way to multiply those good things, and then we'll rise higher. And, you know, thinking to the parable of the talents last week, this is our one or two or five talents that we can multiply and not hide away. So I was just really glad for that thought this week.
Yeah, thank you. I thought that was lovely, because certainly we can start there. Yep, and the talent. So you have it. Maybe you think the only talent you have is to be able to smile at someone. Well, do that. Do whatever you can to make the world a better place. Express love, the love of God, and it will grow. Your talents will grow. Your love will grow. Your joy will grow.
Like the woman who would come to our church, she didn't seem to have much, and she would just pick up the trash because she wanted God's house to be beautiful. And it was just a little thing that was very big for us.
Thank you. Very much so. These little things, so-called little things, they add up to big things, you know. There is really no such thing as a little thing. If you've ever been a receiver of a so-called little thing, you realize
yes.
how much it means.
And the majority of life is little things. It's rare that we are called on to do some great accomplishment or whatever. Most of it is just small, and that's fine.
Yeah, just the little things in life.
And if we are faithful in the little things,
yes.
What does Jesus promise?
And we can
rule over many.
Rulers over many.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes it's the smallest mechanism that gets everything else working.
That's right.
Yes.
I will never forget what a smile means, because that there was a time when everything seemed so dark and somebody's smile meant a whole lot to me. Still does.
Thank
when
you.
I remember.
So true.
But isn't it the evidence of what a huge, incredible power love is?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. When something, when anything is done with love, it can move mountains. It can change people's lives. There isn't anything that it can't do. I mean, we're dealing
with the dead.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're dealing here with something that is just incredibly bigger than any of us could ever imagine. So in great humility, we talk about love. But we need to remember that love is everything.
It's our salvation.
Mm-hmm. You know, the book, The Greatest Thing in the World by Henry Drummond, Mrs. Eddie said, I read somewhere, I think, that she didn't write a book about love because it was already written. And in that book, it tells you, if you were to read, first I thought it was the book itself, but no, I don't, it doesn't mean the book. It means 1 Corinthians 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
read that once a week for the next 3 months, it will change your whole life. 1 Corinthians, it's an incredible chapter. It's in our lesson, such a beautiful lesson we have this week on love. And that, crowning it with that and the Bible. So do that. It doesn't take that long to read that once a week for the next 3 months. I was thinking that's going to be in October. We'll be in pumpkin season. So anyway, let it go to your inward parts and soften and change you. Now,
hello.
Yes.
Oh, hi. I just want to express my gratitude for the things that you have brought. I see perfection and 1 Corinthians. There's only one mind, and this is exactly what I was guided to this week. And it's so wonderful to see that unity. And I would like to also say that reading I See Perfection Daily, it is so amazing. I cannot say how much it has blessed me and helped me. And I'm sure the community and anything really that we can think of. I have been guided, this is decades ago, because I've been reading this for many decades. I See Perfection. And that is very good to do it with the many articles that are about the absolute and the relative, because this is a very delicate point to just see perfection and ignore what we are working with right here, right now. And I think that's very, very important. But there are many, many articles written on the absolute and the relative. And just wanted to share that.
Yeah, no, it's very important. They're both important right now.
I also wanted to share, if I can, Jeremy said about giving a smile just earlier. And I recall reading in one of the writings that there's giving and giving away. So when I think of the loaves and the fishes, that was giving. Giving away is human. It's coming from a point of depletion. The other is giving, a point of a multiplication. So just wanted to share that.
Very good. Good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Because giving from the standpoint of God is just infinite. You can never run out. And Mrs. Eddy says that too. Giving never impoverishes us, right?
Right.
So we must never hold back our giving. Now that leads me.
Well, and just to finish that, if you ever feel like you're giving something away,
mm-hmm.
you're not truly giving. The motive is everything, means everything.
And that's inexhaustible.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's very mortal. It's a point of depletion, like you're taking it from matter. And if I'm taking one piece of a pie, I'm missing a piece of a pie now. Now I have less.
Right.
And I think
you grumble.
Not infinite. Not infinite. Not one mind.
No, and you don't do it freely, and you think the other person owes you something. That's all wrong and human. When you give from the divine standpoint, no one owes you anything. You're just giving like the sun shines.
Mm-hmm. And that quote of doesn't impoverish us says in the service of our maker. And that's such a good point that she made, right? Yes.
Thank you. That's a beautiful point. Thank you. Service of our maker. Humble, humility. Now, in the responsive reading, it says, owe no man anything but to love one another. And Carrie sent a most beautiful article called Oh No Man by Ella Hoag, which brings out a really interesting point. It says the apostles' injunction to owe no man has been ringing down the centuries, admonishing all men to refrain from debt. In the degree that one first pays his debt to God, in the degree that he works first of all the advancements of God's interests by loving him with all his heart and mind and soul and strength, he will find his ability to reflect love to his neighbor increasing. As love for his neighbor thus unfolds, selfishness will diminish, and he will discover a great happiness in seeking his neighbor's good rather than his own. Into such a consciousness as this, there could not enter the thought of getting. As one thus learns to give, he will express honesty and uprightness in every thought, word, and deed. Debts will be both undesired and unnecessary, and the truth of Mrs. Eddy's statement will have again been exemplified, for as she tells us in the First Church of Christ Scientists Miscellany, page 232, the right way wins the right of way, even the way of truth and love, whereby all debts are paid, mankind blessed, and God glorified. That's making a very important point. It says this is the way to get out of debt if anyone's in debt. It says first pay one's first debt to God. That's your first debt. What do you need to give him? Life, truth, and love. I think it's in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments. There's a little note she said to keep in your purse and you'd never go hungry. And that had something to do with life, truth, and love. Mrs. Eddy did it, and she never went hungry. So you give your debt to God, and then you learn to you love him with all your mind, soul, strength, and then your ability to reflect love to your neighbor will increase. And then as love for your neighbor increases and unfolds, selfishness will diminish. You'll discover more happiness. And along with that, you're going to find ways to bless your fellow man. And that will bring you supply.
And it'll keep you healthy.
It'll do all things.
You know, I found that quote that Mrs. Eddy wanted to have them put in their pocket.
Yes, I am.
It's from the Blue Book under chapter 3 under prayers. Love is all powerful. Love is all seeing. Love is ever present. Thy kingdom has come. Thy will is done here on earth as it is in heaven. And earth is heaven. Mrs. Eddy told her students to put this prayer in their pocketbook. And if they did, they would never want.
Thank you so much. That's beautiful. Thank you for finding that. What page was that?
It's in prayers, the section on prayers on page 60, chapter 3.
And you said the Blue Book, right?
Uh-huh. The Blue Book, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. And, you know, this is probably a paraphrase as well, but Mrs. Eddy said, there is no discordant condition you can't love your way out of. So wherever you are, whatever problem you're having, you can love your way out of. And then this, before we close, is just another part of my notes. It was actually something that Karen had sent to me a while ago. And it has to do with in 1 John 3, where says, behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. And think about the love that calls us son or daughter. Think about that love that calls us that. And then Karen found this in the McLaren's commentary. You will never make anything of your professed Christianity. You will never get a drop of happiness or any kind of good out of it. It will neither be a strength or a joy to you unless you make it your habitual occupation to behold the manner of love and look, 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 and look until its warmth fills your heart. I thought that was very beautiful too. Keep looking, to keep thinking the love that calls you a son or a daughter. And look, 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 look until you feel that warmth filling your heart. Many people say they don't feel the love of God. I've heard it. I felt it. But it's definitely possible because he's loving us all the time. And you see, you're missing out on a lot. So let's demand that you do it, okay? Don't accept that you can't. Demand that you can and then feel it.
This is all part of the discipline of working out your salvation. You know, the world will like to tell you that God is far away. But the revealed truth in Christian Science says God is nearer to you than your very breath. He is omnipresent. He is close at hand. He's a very present help in trouble with us all the time, regardless of how it appears.
Thank you. Thank you. So this awesome topic, perhaps you've just found a few more ways to get closer, to feel God's love, to feel that love the Father has toward you, that you're called his son. Spend that week working this, taking the secret, practicing it more, thinking about it all through the day. Now we're going to end on what John Morgan wrote in his Notes on True Vision on the synonym love.
He writes, "Love beholds me as its own beloved. The divine mother, love, conceives me as complete and perfect. I reflect this divine conception and accept it, and so conceive and behold everyone in love. The light of ever-present love illumines the universe. I see that every idea is at rest, never frustrated or thwarted, never tense, and so my vision rests in action and is at peace and satisfied. Love's viewpoint confers impartiality, forgiveness, constancy. As Shakespeare has it, quote, love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends when the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken, end quote. I look with the eye of spiritual innocency and behold no evil, for we are in the divine presence. I behold man in love and blot out all sense of imperfection, all fear and dislike. I look with the eye of love's benevolence and behold in man all the hues and qualities of God. In this view, there is full recognition of the divine nature. So I look with the eye of gratitude, for the divine glory fills all space. With a grateful outlook, I mother my entire universe and draw into expression the beauty of holiness." And from Mary Baker Eddy, from General Collectania, published by Gilbert C. Carpenter, quote, "I saw the love of God encircling the universe and man filling all space. And that divine love so permeated my own consciousness that I loved with Christ-like compassion everything I saw. This realization of divine love called into expression the beauty of holiness, the perfection of being which healed and regenerated and saved all who turned to me for help," end quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.